This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show, every weekday afternoon on Nashville Sports Radio.
And welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. Don't forget, coming up at 4:46, another update, opening round of the Masters from Westwood One. Also around 5:20, best-selling author, veteran sports writer, columnist of golf, and more, 36 books to his credit. The young and great friend of mine, Steve Eubanks, will be talking Masters and more. But right now, a chance to visit with Hall of Famer, not once, not twice, not three times, four-time Sports Writer of the Year here in Tennessee, Teresa Walker with the Associated Press here in Nashville. Teresa, thank you as always. Welcome back.
My pleasure, Johnny. And yeah, when you say it like that, it's like, oh man, now I got to get one for the thumb, right?
Well, you said, you know, you were allowed to celebrate. The old Nick Saban rule, you were allowed to celebrate for 24 hours, then bam. I don't even think you took 24 hours. You were already working on one for the thumb.
Well, that's the thing. You know, in this business, as I told some college students a few days ago, it's always about the next story. You know, in our business, you can't rest on any laurels because, you know, if you don't keep moving, then it's like a NASCAR race. If you're not careful, you're going to get mixed out of the pack and you're going to fall back and you're going to lose position. So you just have to keep working.
You know, there's obviously some stories. I don't think I've ever asked you this. I know there's just some stories you have to cover, you know, games that you have to cover, NFL playoff games, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I learned this lesson when I worked in college athletics, is the fact there's never enough. There's always a story to be written, just not enough time in the day. At what point, I mean, how tough is it for you to pick and choose exactly how your week is going to play out?
Oh, it can be very challenging. Now, you know, for the past 2.5 weeks, it was easy. I was helping on the NCAA women's tournament remotely from my home office and, you know, working on stories connected with the tournament. You know, I had a story on the deficiency of diversity. You know, the fact that this past season there were only 13 black women coaches out of 65 Power 5 head jobs. And that number is now up to 14 because Wisconsin hired a black woman coach and Auburn replaced the coach that they fired with a black woman. I did a story on the COVID impact on schedules. And, you know, looking through all 64 schedules of the teams that got into the tournament, you know, found that every team had at least some impact by COVID, whether it was somebody else's game, you know, somebody else having COVID issues, having to reschedule a game. And, you know, so sometimes it's built around events that I'm getting ready to cover or help cover. And then sometimes it's, you know, stories that I love to just have a chance to tell. Back in February, I had a story on Rhiannon Totke, a sports writer in Knoxville,
right,
and the great foundation that she's got. And that's one that I've been wanting to do for a while. And, you know, I was going to try and do it last fall, but football season, basketball, football, I mean, October is a bad, bad month where I'm just trying to survive from day to day. So I finally got to that in February. So it's just, it's mixing, matching, triage is probably the word that I use best.
By the way, you know, speaking of covering the women's tournament, you know, it's interesting. I know one of the first storylines was the fact that their weight equipment was not the same as the men's. And I was throwing that out there as like, how could you be that dumb if you're the NCAA? If you're the planning committee, how could you mess this up? But then I started thinking about how, from a women's basketball perspective, they pick and choose the things that really irritate them. And I get back to the point, like, you know, we look on the men's side. You know, Duke is not coming to Nashville to play Belmont on Belmont's home court, right? So at least when you get to the NCAA tournament, you know, it's fair. You're not playing on anybody's home court, although there's usually some advantages where you're closer to somebody's home base than other places. But at least early on, you're not having to deal with that. On the women's side, this is where I have a problem, and that's why I really enjoyed the run of some teams, like an Arizona, which was a 3 seed, for example, is the fact that if you're 1 through 16, you know, other than COVID years, you're getting the advantage of playing your first two games, if you win, on your own home court. And I don't see how that's fair at all for seeds 17 through 64. I love the fact that I think that the NCAA can learn with what happened in San Antonio, and maybe they get this bidding war. I've been throwing it out there, a bidding war between cities. 1 year Nashville can host it. 1 year Indianapolis can host it. San Antonio, whoever wants to bid for it, and the whole tournament would be in that city for 3 weeks. Your thoughts?
Johnny, there were absolutely coaches saying, you know, this was great, and, you know, let's do this again. And that's going to be the interesting thing. Do they try to do this? You know, the one thing that the NCAA has found is when you take those first and second round games away, you know, that, you know, and you put them on a different court, you know, sometimes the attendance is bad. I remember the year that Tennessee Lady Vols were expected to be in Chattanooga. Instead, they get sent to Florida, and attendance in Chattanooga was horrific. I mean, it was not great at all. So maybe part of the problem is the NCAA has been farming out, you know, promotion and hosting of the first and second rounds to campus sites, bidding for them, and, you know, so, you know, leading that promotion and ticket selling to the campuses. And, you know, it can be challenging when you don't know who's coming. You know, let's put it this way. When there's a men's NCAA tournament site in the state of Carolina, the odds have been really, really good that either Duke or North Carolina are going to be playing there, right? And that makes it really easy in the state of Carolina to buy tickets. But for first and second round games, you know, fans want to see what it is. And I think the one thing that was kind of proven for this NCAA tournament is that, you know, this is the first time that they ever put every game was televised. Instead of usually previously in the first and second rounds, they'd do whip around coverage. You know, they'd focus on the Tennessees, the UConns, the schools with, you know, known fan bases to put on TV, and then they just whip around and you missed the great games that way. And, you know, as a result, we got to see Belmont's big win.
Right.
You know, getting their first program win. That was on TV in full. It wasn't something where they cut in and out and showed you the highlights. You know, and when you look at the TV ratings, you know, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, the championship game, Final Four, those ratings were way up. And, Richard Deitch has been making a great argument that, you know, put the championship game on ABC. Do it. And see what you get. The numbers on Sunday, they outdrew just about everything on Sunday, including a baseball game that followed them up on the same channel on ESPN. So, you know, I'm very curious. You know, I sat in on the Women's Coaches Basketball Coaches Association, had a meeting with Mark Emmert and Lynn Holtzman and Dan Gavitt of the NCAA last week, and, you know, the coaches were not happy. I mean, Muffet McGraw, she was essentially accusing Mark Emmert of, you know, violating his own requirements for gender equity. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's like they were putting together the two tournaments. Yes, they had not run the first and second rounds before, but, you know, weight room, you couldn't tell what they were providing for the men, and you're just, you know, that's for the women. And, I mean, some of the things were easy to see. That, you know, no March Madness logos slapped on the middle of the court. Even into the final games, it was NCAA women's basketball. You know, very generic, right? And yet the trademark allows for it to be used for the women's tournament. So, you know, and they were asking the questions. Well, it's like, if we can have access to it, then talk to our TV partners. There should be a way to work around some of this. So, they had lots of questions, lots of talk. And, you know, the one thing I think that they've seen is that, you know, that they've got some power. They've got interest. And, you know, you've got some young coaches like Adia Barnes at Arizona, Dawn Staley at South Carolina, and shoot, Nell Fortner. She's kind of in that little, maybe in the gap between the Summit, Vanderveer years, or legend of coaches to the group that is now. But, you know, if you saw her social media post a couple weeks ago, boy, she didn't let anything slide in blasting the NCAA tournament. So I'm very curious to see, Johnny, how things go moving forward, how much, you know, what changes, how much more we see on TV, how much more money maybe goes into this. Because, you know, from what I've seen of the ratings, you know, look at the gender numbers in the country. Women want to see women playing sports. And guess what? Seeing some of the tweets Monday night, people watching the men's championship, you know, they were kind of grateful that at least they had some really great basketball in the women's tournament. Because in the men's side, well, you had that Gonzaga UCLA game, but other than that, the women's tournament was where you wanted to watch this year.
Speaking of great basketball, how about the Memphis Grizzlies? Four straight wins, five out of the last six. And usually, you know, it's like you don't have to watch the whole game in NBA during the regular season, just pay attention to the final 2 minutes. I mean, the fact that the Grizzlies are winning these games, but I mean, look at these last wins. The first of this four-game winning streak by 12. Then they beat the 76ers by 16. They beat Miami by 12. They beat Atlanta by 18. They were underdogs in three of these four games. They still won the games with plenty of room to spare. And with this four-game winning streak, they're a game and a half behind Dallas now in the Southwest Division. And, you know, and they're going to get healthier at the end of the month. That's the other part about this. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what happens to this team moving forward.
Oh, me too, because right now they are on track to potentially, make the play-in series. And, in fact, at this point it would be kind of a disappointment if they don't make it. And, you know, the way they're playing and winning. Now, let's be honest, in this winning streak they've gone against teams that are missing players. But the Grizzlies are missing players too. Brandon Clark didn't play last night because I think it was thigh soreness. And Grayson Allen had an amazing game.
30 points from Grayson Allen last night.
Exactly. Justice Winslow has missed some games after they finally got him back. And you mentioned Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, so they've got several players who've been out as well. So the injury excuse doesn't fall. And this is a team that seems to be growing up. You know, Dylan Brooks had an amazing game in Miami. So, and then it was Grayson Allen who stepped forward. And then you got Jonas Valanciunas, who just keeps coming through with double-double after every night. So, John Morant doesn't have to carry this team right now, which is a very good thing. You know, you don't want him to have to be the focus of every team, and this shows their depth. So, let's put it this way. I'm not making too many plans for May to make sure my schedule stays clear because of the Grizzlies.
But one more question before we let you go. The Nashville Predators, all right, so they've won 8 out of their last 9 during that stretch, included a 6-game winning streak, and they've also won 10 out of the last 12. And, you know, we had this conversation last week, let's play the wait-and-see game. Now that another week has transpired, they get Dallas tonight. Certainly you got to win games like this since Detroit's in the bottom in the basement of the Central. But, you know, it seems like now for 2 straight weeks, we're saying all the right things about the Preds.
Absolutely. Now, you know, they play Detroit tonight, and then they come back, and, you know, the next 3 games after tonight are not going to be easy. Tampa Bay on Saturday night, Dallas on Sunday night, and then Tampa Bay again on Tuesday night. And, you know, the schedule gets tougher from here. And you can't count that you're going to keep beating Chicago. You know, being 5-0 against them is certainly nice. Can they keep it up? And, you know, right now, got to think that, they've played their way onto that ledge that, you know, puts David Poile in some tough situations. Do you trade anybody at this point with a team that is in playoff contention and has that 4 spot? That's kind of tough. So, and they're expecting some people back in the next week, it seems. You know, David Poile said the other day that, you know, some after the trade deadline. So, you know, Forsberg, Duchesne, Ellis coming back. So, and this is a challenge. Because, they haven't, they've gotten better playing the way they need to play, but is this team still, is this a team that can make a deep run in the playoffs? I can't say yes, but I also didn't see them being in this position at this point. So, you know, they're in a position right now, Johnny, they just need to keep playing and winning, and because, you know what, the instant they stop, that's when the season's going to turn.
Well, this is, in fact, against the Red Wings tonight, this will be the final time they play them in the regular season. They're 5-2, nice easy wins during that first seven games. After this, you don't see Detroit again.
Exactly, and you've got a couple more games, 3 more games left with Chicago, which is a good thing. But at a certain point, you know, it's tough to shut out an opponent for an entire season. So, you know, they have to keep getting better. You know, Pekka-Rinne and now Juuse Saros have been carrying them and playing really, really well in net, and they're going to have to, keep improving. But that's the thing, Johnny. We knew that there was talent on this team. You know, the thing that was mind-boggling for so long was that why aren't they playing better? So, you know, now we're seeing them do that, play better, and, yeah, there's still some room for improvement. So can they get there this season? That's the question.
Do me a favor before we let you go. Remind the listeners again all the different ways to keep up with your coverage.
Like my page on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. Do both at Teresa M. Walker.
Teresa, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Look forward to talking to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.